Hey, what's your problem? You have business problems? We have business solutions.
Maybe.
Well, maybe.
Yeah. Exactly.
Life is a fight.
It is.
In business, every day is a fight.
Every day.
So, hey, what's your problem?
Yeah. Thank you, John David Wells of The Wells Report. Check him out on Facebook at The Wells Report. Like I said, he's the big voice guy for the show. From the Big Dot HQ in Spring Hill, Tennessee, this is the What's Your Problem podcast. Check out our illustrious sponsor, Big Dot Lighting, Electrical, and HVAC, for anything lighting, electrical, and heating and air. Go figure. Just go to BigDotInc.com. Yes, the What's Your Problem podcast is a podcast about... It's always something. When you're a business professional or business owner here and around Middle Tennessee... And today we're staying it right in our own backyard with our guest. Oh, this is a video and audio podcast, by the way. If you're watching it, you can listen to it. If you're listening to it and for some reason you want to see my ugly mug, you can watch it. Just check it out at whatsyourproblempodcast.com. I am your host, Jim McCarthy with jimmccarthyvoiceovers.com. And today, like I said, we're going right into our own backyard right here in Spring Hill. With Mr. Alex Jimenez.
Got it.
How you doing, my brother?
Great.
Yeah. And he's a fellow podcaster, mortgage guy, overall entrepreneur, and influencer in and around the Middle Tennessee area.
Yep.
Right? Very cool, man. We're going to start things off like we always do with something we call the Random Five. Let me just turn this off and turn that on. Alex, the Random Five is completely random questions. Do not hold me responsible for what may come up.
Hopefully they're good questions.
They typically are. It's really kind of fun. It is brought to you by Kalioka Company. Check those guys out. Link is in the description. If you've ever had a really stinky car, particularly with cat urine, Kalioka Company makes a cleaner that has probiotics that are very hungry for odors. That kind of bacteria, and they do a great job. It's an all-natural cleaner. I think you can drink it, but don't hold me to that, or I'm going to indemnify myself right now and say, no, you can't do that. But maybe you can. Now I'm going to get myself sued. Anyway. All right, here we go, Alex. Question number one. In what situations do you wish you could throw down a smoke bomb and disappear? Told you there. Some of them pretty good.
I was going to say, that's a super random one. How about any situation where, I don't know, just any uncomfortable situation, you know, where you get there and you're just kind of the spotlight and maybe you just don't know the answer, like the answer to this question. I don't know it, and I wish I could throw a smoke bomb down.
I know those situations of which you speak. I've been in several where I've just stuck my foot in my mouth.
Right, exactly. You know? I've done the same.
One in particular, real quick, was when I was doing an event for a songwriter named Reggie Ham, who was on our first three episodes, I forgot the name of the band I was introducing. Yeah, that was...
That'll do it.
The Martins, of all things.
You remember it now, though.
I do.
There you go.
Yeah. But at the time, it really... I spaced.
Right.
And I was like, 5,000 people in front of me, and the band behind me. Hey!
You gotta look at the kick drum. The kick drum usually has
it wasn't on the kick drum. They were waiting for me to wave them on stage, and I'm like, hey, come on out, guys! That's what I did.
That's awesome.
I'm like, holy crap, I forgot your names.
Yeah.
Question number two, what is the benefit of consciousness from an evolutionary standpoint?
Do we have that smoke bomb
that's
option
a deep
again?
One.
That's a deep one. So I would say consciousness is just being aware of your surroundings and adapting and evolving based on things we identify to that create issues in our life.
That's a really good answer.
Mental. I know.
Yeah.
No need for a smoke bomb.
You didn't need a smoke bomb for that one. You handled it well.
There we go.
What's something everyone should experience at least once in their life?
You know, this is going to be a tough one. I think some sort of hardship. I think hardships challenge us to do better and be better and make us realize what it is that we have that's great in our life.
Yeah. Adversity of some sort.
Yep. Absolutely.
They say adversity is the best university.
It is.
Bam. How do you hope you'll change as a person in the future?
I just hope that I can evolve to be a leader that my kids can look up to and a person that they can envy, so to speak, when they get older.
Nice.
You know, I know I'm in that position as it is, but I want to continue to evolve to a better leader to where when I pass away, I leave a legacy to them versus somebody that created issues in their life.
Nice. You solve problems instead of creating drama around problems that we all get.
Right, right.
Nice. Absolutely. I think this is the final one. I was in radio, so I don't know how to count very well.
What makes... I don't know how to count either.
I hope you will.
Right.
What makes someone a, quote, good person?
You know, that's a challenging question simply because there's a lot of aspects that we can't directly identify that make somebody a good person. A good person can be a good person in their own way and not necessarily a good person to us.
Right.
So I think it's all about how we perceive and receive people that makes them good or bad in our own eyes.
Very good. There you go. The Random Five brought to you by Kalioka Company. We're going to take a quick break and get into it. All things Alex Jimenez from Spring Hill, Tennessee. We'll be right back.
Henry Ford once said that if you need a machine and don't buy it, then you will ultimately find that you have paid for it and don't have it. Nothing could be truer about energy-efficient LED lighting in your business. At Big Dot Lighting, we can show you how a portion of your savings from a commercial LED lighting upgrade will be paid for in hardly any time at all. Until then, you're paying for them anyway. Book a no-cost lighting energy assessment with Big Dot Lighting. At least 30% of your utility bill is waiting to be saved. Go to BigDotLighting.com.
All right, we are back. Mr. Alex, thank you for coming out here.
Yes, sir.
All the way out. You're downtown in Spring Hill, so yeah, it wasn't
a drive. It was a drive.
It was a total drive.
About 4 miles.
You and I have never met before, became familiar with each other on Facebook throughout all the different Spring Hill pages on Facebook that are very useful and can be a lot of fun and also very drama-filled.
Very much so.
Absolutely. So you are, every time you post on some of these pages, you get a ton of engagement and a lot of people commenting, liking the posts. You share just really great nuggets of wisdom when it comes to self-improvement, thinking better about yourself, thinking in the right direction, marinating your mind in good stuff, and just motivational types of things. It sounds like you had a hard road to get where you are, though.
I did.
Am I right?
Yep, absolutely.
Tell me about that. How did it all begin?
So we can dive all the way down the rabbit hole on this one. So I started off very young. I was physically abused by my sister's father. And that took place up until I was about 11 years old. Now, not to skip over that whole range of what happened. There were several times where I'd run away from home. There was times where the Child Protective Services got involved. Now, mind you, back in the 80s, if you spanked your kid, there was no problem.
Right.
If you spanked him a little too much, still not a problem. If you spanked him a whole lot, it wasn't a problem as long as he had a good reason.
Right.
And I was in that wasn't a problem because he had a good reason. Along with that, there was, you know, my mom was selling drugs. He was selling drugs. There was the physical, the mental abuse. You know, it was everything negative that you can think of as a young child.
Right.
Was, I don't want to say everything. They're all things that I'm glad I went through because it's built the character. And I'm not sure that another individual could have went through the same scenario and came out the same way I did.
Right.
You know, I went through that. I went through us being broke and basically homeless. Nowhere to stay. I remember my mom begging for a bucket of chicken at a church's chicken in Riverside, California, and telling them, hey, I'll give you my driver's license and come back in 2 or 3 days and pay you back. I just want to feed my kids.
Wow.
You know, and so all of those things, I'm sitting there as the oldest child. And I'm analyzing. I was the man of the house. I was 11 years old, and I was the man of the house.
Right.
You know, that was because at that point, my mom finally decided to separate from my stepdad, realized that the abusive relationship that was there was no longer worth having. I mean, and when I say abusive, I had seen my mom's eye busted open. I'd seen her be beat. I was beat. You know, there was times I was locked in my room, starved. Again, you name it.
Right.
You can go there. In addition to that, I was a victim of sexual abuse by 3 different people. So you have that background as well, which that's something. Let me be clear. Most people aren't open about that stuff.
Right.
Me, I'm open about it because if I can share an experience and help somebody else grow, that's what I want to share. You know, I'm here on this earth to share the things I've been through to help others go through them.
It gives them air cover to share their story as well, because otherwise they're just bottling it up and carrying that weight around on their shoulders.
Yep. And I did that. Yeah. So to be clear, as a youth, that's absolutely what I did. I bottled it up. I kept it as anger because I didn't know how to deal with it.
Right.
In turn, it ended up, I got sent away when I was young. I got thrown into juvenile detention. I liked to fight when I was a kid. Mm. And again, it was because of that bottled up anger, you know, and I didn't start maturing as a human being until I was about 17. Right. That's when I finally said, okay, I've got to do something different or else I'm going to end up in prison, you know? And then as I progressed over the years, I still made mistakes. Don't get me wrong. You know, and they weren't juvenile. Oh, he just messed up. He shouldn't have been speeding or something. It was stupid stuff I did. Fortunately, none of it got me in trouble to where it jeopardized my future. But they were mistakes that you wouldn't want to see your kids make.
Right.
You know. The biggest changing point in my life was when my daughter was conceived.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of brought me to where I am now. You know, that was 7 years ago. I'm 40 years old, so 7 years ago wasn't a long time ago. But there came a point where I decided, hey, enough's enough. I'm not getting into trouble anymore. I'm going to start being an adult. But it wasn't the adult I am now, if that makes sense. So,
it's not the adult you'll be when you're 50.
Correct.
You know, it's amazing. I'm kind of in the same boat where age-wise, you start looking at life. You start realizing how much life experience you have and how you now have license to share. I mean, at least in my story, it's been in the last 5 years that I feel like I finally have license to share. I have the experience in a business sense and wisdom and how to talk about sales and selling and things of that nature to disperse that to other people. I mean, but brother, you've had license to share probably since you were 25 years old. I mean,
yeah,
with what you've been through.
I mean, I would definitely agree with that, you know, and it's, again, it's some of those things that I've never been ashamed. You know what I mean? As a small child, I remember there was one particular situation. I was locked in my room. Mm. I remember we were close enough to the school. I could hear the bell ring. Mm. And I couldn't come out. Literally, if I came out of my room, it would have been worse than anything. I was destined for my butt to get kicked if I'd have walked out. And I mean that in a complete literal sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember I jumped out my window and I was on what would have been the third floor, jumped down to the second story balcony, then jumped down to the first story balcony and ran over to a friend's house. And I ended up, he was in school. He got out of school. And I ended up kind of pleading with him to stay there. I didn't tell him why, because at that point I was ashamed of what was going on. I bring that story up because as years progressed, I realized that this wasn't me. Mm. That this individual had something wrong with him that created that friction and that hatred that he took out on me.
Yeah.
And so I think as I progressed in life, I started looking at that and I started looking at, okay, now what can I do to help people realize that same scenario?
To break that pattern.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Because, you know, ideally, I say ideally, from a social standpoint, the assumption is, well, that person grew up in an abusive household, he's going to be abusive. Mm. Or that person grew up around drugs, he's going to do drugs. Or that person was sexually offended and sexually molested, he's going to be a sexual offender. And I've broke the mold on all of those things because of the fact that I've chosen to take a different route. But society typically views that as that. Does that make sense?
It does. And yeah, the optics on it surely kind of carry forward. And it's you know what's really popping in my head as you're telling me this story is you ever read the book or see the movie The Shack?
I can't say that I have.
Okay. It's a faith-based book where a father is coping with losing his daughter to a kidnapper, sexual assault type of thing where she was killed, raped and killed. Maybe she was 7 years old kind of thing. I don't think it's a true story, but I mean, it's a very godly, faith-based type of book with a very interesting twist to it.
Yeah.
And at one point, basically, he's shown by God that you know, this man that did this atrocious act on your daughter and caused so much massive shifting and change in your family. And, you know, even our relationship is different now because of what happened. You know, his whole thing was bringing it back. What shaped this person to do what they did?
Right.
You know, what happened to them? And what about the person who did that to them? Where do we, you know, it was very interesting. That's kind of rolling around in my head. And it takes somebody in that lineage, like what you're doing, to just say enough.
You know? Right.
And it's funny because one of the guests we had on is named Marcus Manise, and he's got a program called Stronger Than My Father. And he talks about all the different things that have been going on, well, you know, for the past decade, several decades,
right,
with how certain children just act a certain way and get in trouble, like what you're talking about. And every time he says, okay, where's the father?
Right.
And there's always, you know, probably a 95% chance that there's just not a father involved.
Yeah.
You know, that's always been there. Or there's somebody involved in your, like in your case, a stepfather that's just wasn't healthy.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
So carrying that forward, I mean, you find yourself recognizing the earmarks with situations, being so familiar with it in other people?
Yeah. I feel like I can, there's not a sense to it, but you can look and you can say, hey, you know what, there's something more going on.
Yeah.
I feel like you can definitely recognize them. And it's things I can identify, you know, when you see somebody act out a certain way, or how somebody acts around their parents, or how somebody acts around people, you know, and this goes from childhood to adulthood. I mean, you can see somebody and you see certain behaviors and you're like, I wonder, you know, and you can kind of probe around and get an answer to that to some degree.
Yeah.
And what I find easier is being open. You know, I've got a really good buddy of mine that is a Marine Corps veteran that's, you know, you would look at this guy and be like, dude, this guy's tough as nails, you know? I mean, physically, he looks like he's tough as nails. But when you break down into his core and you understand what's went on in his life and he opens up to you, you're like, dude, you are tough as nails. you have to be. And that all took place because of my willingness to share as well.
Yeah.
Because he was like, oh yeah, you've been through, and it was kind of like piece by piece by piece by piece. All of a sudden it's like, boom, here's our blocks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, own it.
Yeah. I mean, when you put that out there in a trusting environment where they feel safe,
right,
and it's not going to, you know, it'll stay between you, them, and the walls. And yeah, they're,
yeah.
Yeah. You got to let it out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that led to how you started crafting your life, I guess, in your late teens, early 20s. Did you start reading different things, books? Who were you influenced by that kind of put you on your path?
You know, as far as influence, I've always looked to people, not superstars. Like, I've never looked at Michael Jordan and been like, oh my God, I want to be just like you, you know? It's always either people around me, people that are what we would consider normal people. People that would walk around the store and never look and be like, I'm a superstar, why are you talking to me? Or,
right,
you know, signing a million autographs. And so I can't directly relate it to one individual. I just remember wanting to be better. I remember having that thought process, like, I never want to be poor again. I never want to, when I was young, to have power, we would hook up Christmas lights to a battery. And that went on for a good stint, you know, in my life. And I never wanted to do that again.
Right.
We would still water from the sprinklers. That was after several times of my mom going out and turning the water on and cutting the lock off the water company put on to shut the water off.
Right.
I never wanted to be in that position again.
Right.
And so it was more self-awareness of, hey, you're either going to end up like this or that.
Mm-hmm.
You choose. And so I began to do that. And then as I progressed, I did start reading books. Books were a huge thing. They're still a huge thing for me, because you can literally take the time of whatever mentor you're listening to. In my case, I like Jocko Willink, you know, David Goggins, some of those writers that I'll listen to, and you can stop and rewind instead of saying, hey, say that again. So I've got 12 hours with Jocko Willink, right? If I read his Extreme Ownership book on audiobook, because I prefer audio so that I can continue to do things while I listen. But now I can rewind and he can say it again. Or I can go back and listen to chapter 5 again because that chapter influenced me. So, you know, that's, I get a lot from leaders like that versus, you know, Michael Jordan or something. Not saying there's anything wrong with those leaders. They're just not the leaders I look to.
And it's funny that you mentioned earlier about how patterns repeat themselves through generations. My father was an entrepreneur in the purest sense of the word, wanted to do things his own way.
And, right.
It was the right way, the wrong way, and his way, basically. But he was always a business owner as long as I had known him and did things his own way. But it didn't translate to me. My brother, he became an attorney and kind of carved his own path. In that sense, I had trouble finding purpose and identity over the course of my impressionable teenage years, which ended up being drumming for a season and learning how to play the drums up in Connecticut. I was the drummer in high school.
Right.
That became the radio business in my early 20s, hesitantly, because I was always told how radio, you didn't make that much money, but my entrepreneurial spirit wasn't always as on fire as it is now. I was a late bloomer.
Right.
But in one of the bands I was in, and this is kind of the first inclination or indication I've seen and identified in another person, that entrepreneurial, flip your bird to the world. This is, I'm doing it my way.
Yep.
I don't need a part-time job. Because I was always the guy, oh, I got to stop playing, guys. I got to get to my job, you know.
Yeah.
He always had a hunk of a car sitting out in his driveway. Granted, it was his parents' house.
Right.
But he would buy these Camaros and part them out. Nice. And he'd make, you know, $20,000 off of a $600 investment.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm going, dude, how do you do that? He just was that natural. And his parents weren't like that either.
Right, right.
He just was.
Yep. Yep.
And he kind of broke that. You know, he still is to this day.
Yeah.
The guy that just, he's his own person, man.
He just finds a way.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And that's what I think, when people ask me, what is it that I took from my childhood that I can attribute to success? You know? Some of those things are, for example, identifying. I have a, I can't remember what they call it, but basically where I can read people pretty rapidly when they walk in a room. And I got that from, my stepdad would walk in the front door and I need to tell, did he have a bad day at work?
Yeah.
Did he have a good day? Am I going to get my butt kicked tonight? Am I going to eat? What's going to happen? And, you know, that I took that and now I use that on a day-to-day basis. You know, with clients especially, I'll be in a situation and I can read, hey, there's an issue here.
Yeah.
Let's figure out what that issue is.
Almost like an NLP kind of thing.
Correct. Right? Yeah. Intuition is what they
call
it.
Total intuition.
But, you know, that there's such a benefit from that. And that's a positive thing I took from such a negative situation that I could have easily buried, you know? And for years I did. Let's bear that in mind. For years I buried the negativity because it was like, I don't want to relive that, you know? Your mind, and you referenced NLP, your mind will have all this stuff stored in it. All you got to do is open up the filing cabinet and say, hey, oh, let's deal with that. But your mind's like, no, we're not going to deal with that one. Not today. We don't have the strength to do that today.
Yeah. You know? You can sense the energy off people.
Yeah.
My wife's the same way.
Yep.
And a lot of people can, to a certain extent, they have that.
Right.
They just don't, like, I think you've been made aware to recognize that in yourself and then know, well, hey, this is a tool I can put in my toolbox.
Yep.
I, for some reason, think that I need to pay attention to that. A lot of people, I'd say it's like salesmanship. I think everybody's a salesperson. That's whether or not you know it.
Right.
Right.
Or you're good at it.
Well, you can always get better at it.
Yeah.
Exactly. If you embrace it and understand that, hey, I am a, at some level, I'm a salesperson.
Right.
And I know I can work on that to start influencing the things that I want out of life.
Yep.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, a lot of that, you know, that was an intrinsic kind of quality about what you could, you know, draw out of those experiences early on in your life that now apply to what you're doing,
right.
You know, and being able to read people is huge.
Yeah,
huge.
Absolutely.
And in the car business, when I was in it, we had, you know, I could tell whether someone was going to buy a car that day. That's how, you know, you just got to that point.
I'm the guy that when I walk in, you're like, he's buying a car today. How do I know? Because I've seen his car in the parking lot 8 times.
He drives through all the time. He's a drive-by.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, typically they were parking in a particular spot, and then eventually you'd go, you know, go through the test drive and have to look at their trade-in. And if it was clean, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're ready to buy now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna get a better trade value if I clean my car. No, you're
right.
not. You're gonna send a signal to me that you're ready to buy right now.
See, and that's where I would trick people. My cars are always clean.
Right.
So like, if you go get in my car right now, you'd be like, okay, there's a duster for his dash on the passenger seat.
Yeah.
And a little organizer. Literally, when I got rid of my last vehicle, I went in there, I grabbed 2 items out of the glove box, a couple things out of the center console, and then my little organizer out of the back, and I was done. Like 30 seconds, I was out of the other car.
Good for you, man.
You know, so. But
you could make a video on that.
Right.
Teach people how to be more organized in their cars.
Yeah.
I need that.
It's just form of habit.
What kind of car? Are you a car guy?
I am.
Cars?
I'm a huge car guy. So.
What's your flavor?
So I recently bought a Panamera, Porsche Panamera.
Right.
I came from the BMW world. I still have a BMW M6, but the Porsche is a totally different animal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the M6 is a very rowdy, fast. You know, it's a night out in the town on a Friday when you're 20 years old.
Right.
Versus the Porsche is more like, hey, now we're a little more established, and this is a night on the town, but we're at a black tie affair versus going to the club.
Yeah, that is very true. When you see somebody driving a Mercedes C-Class, you're like, anybody can afford one of those.
Right.
But if you pull up in a CLS or a S-Class, You're doing something different.
Yeah. That's just me as a car guy. You know, I've always been a car guy, and that's actually when I was young, that was embedded in me.
Yeah.
You know, and that helped me through a lot in my life. Was being a car guy, because it gave me something to focus on.
Is that your kind of like a daily focus that you look towards? You know, car is an automobile or something like that as a major motivator?
So it's a big goal.
Yeah.
So I had a goal when I purchased my M6. So I went a year where I didn't hit the goal, so I didn't buy it. And then the following year I hit it, and it was very intentional. It was like, okay, this is the next vehicle. Same thing with my Panamera, is I went this length of time, and I was like, I want it, but I hadn't hit my goal.
Yeah.
And originally it was a 911 I wanted, but then my fiance reminded me, we have two toddlers, and they need to fit in the car.
Yeah, 911's tough.
Yeah, but it is. It's a focus in the background, in the fact that, to me, mentally, it has nothing to do with the status of it. It has to do with the fact you've made it to this level now.
What are those goal levels for you, just out of curiosity?
That's my mechanic asked me the same thing. He's like, what's next? I'm like, I don't know.
Do you write your goals down every day?
I don't every day. Yeah. I'm a mental storer.
Right.
So I know a lot of people like to write them down. I'm a mental person and a visual person.
Right.
And so like with my M6, what I did is I put pictures. I have Apple TVs throughout my office, and I put pictures of M6s on them.
Right.
So we go back to conscious mind. I walk past, I notice it sitting on the screen. It reminds me, boom, we got to do this. Why? Because of that, you know? Mm. And so that conscious effort, in addition to that, I've got pictures of my kids on there. I've got pictures of my fiance on there. You know, all the things that are important, you could literally sit at my couch at my office and look and tell me everything that's important in my life based on what pops up. And
that's a slideshow.
It is. Yeah.
I got you.
And it's a constant reminder, but it's just that it's that peripheral. You see it pop up and you're like, oh yeah, that's right. That's right. You know,
I'm not even sure what I have on my desktop.
Well, and it's one of those things, like I said, I'm very visual. If you sit in my office one day, you'll notice everything I have, there's a visual reference, you know? And so,
and that's your thing. That's something that you know, jives with you.
Yep.
My biggest problem, maybe this is going to be an episode about what my problem is.
Right.
My biggest problem is figuring out how to organize my goals. Like, you listen to some of these guys out there, and a lot of them have license to speak because they've done it. They've earned the battle scars in business and stuff like that. Grant Cardone is one of them. He is, you know, he talks about writing down his goals every day. I'm like, that is a habit that is tough to form. I don't know why.
Right.
I just can't get past that mental block.
Well, and it is. I mean, now there's a level of commitment when you do that.
Yeah.
And that's the assumption is, hey, you're buying into this every day. But here's what I do. And mind you, I'm not saying anything that Grant's doing is wrong, because he's obviously doing things right.
Yeah.
But I tell people, I say, hey, I told my mechanic when he asked me, I had a 535 at the time, and he's like, well, so what's next? I'm like, M6.
Yeah.
And I blurted it out, and I'm like, oh, I should have thought about that before I said it. Because now next time I see him, he's going to ask me how I'm doing on it. But you start to get people that hold you accountable.
Yeah.
And they start to say, hey, do you ever buy that BMW? No, here's why, you know. So that is, it's something, again, I haven't come up with a new one. When people ask, I say a 911, because I still want that 911. But I don't think that's the ultimate one.
Yeah.
That's just the next one.
I've gotten to the point, well, lately, where I can actually pull the trigger on something. I've always wanted like a really nice E-Class or CLS. Yeah. That's what I sold when I sold cars, was Mercedes. And, you know, lately I've been seeing some of the S-Classes used, of course.
Because
I don't really, you know, I get to the point where I'm like, I know I could pull the trigger on this.
Right.
It wouldn't be an issue.
Right.
But it's, you know, it doesn't have a warranty. And if this thing breaks, it's going to be pricey.
It's super expensive.
It's high test gas. You know, what's the insurance going to, you know? And I start thinking about that.
Right.
I'm like, maybe I'm not ready for it yet.
Yeah. It's one of those things. You're 110% right. Let's be clear there. You look at it and you're like, 93 octane.
Yeah.
You know, best insurance, that you have to have the best insurance.
Yeah.
And then, you know, State Farm offers this little thing. You throw it in your car and you get 10% off. I'm like, if I throw that thing in my car, you're going to give me 50% on because I'm going to violate every rule that little disc has.
Yeah. But I mean, that's always been kind of a pinnacle. I promised myself when I sold Mercedes, one day I will own one.
Yeah.
So, of course, my wife was the first one to get a Mercedes.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah. So, I mean, and she's kind of the person that I don't need one. I'm fine driving the 13-year-old minivan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We got it to pull our camper that we enjoy doing stuff.
There you go.
With, Working on the house. I mean, that's the other thing that lately a lot of people around Middle Tennessee, they're challenged with is trying to, you know, we have such a tremendous buyer's market here that's going on, and as well as the rest of the country, but here is just hyper-focused.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of these people that are, you know, like us, okay, yeah, I can get $500,000 for my house that I paid half for.
Right.
Where am I going to go?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So we're just doubling down and investing in our house.
That's what a lot of people are doing that. So with the mass amount of equity, and I'm not trying to get too deep into my profession, but you know, this is something that people can consider. With the mass amount of equity, maybe you can go and build that outdoor kitchen that you've always wanted, the one you envisioned, you know? And that's what we look at from our standpoint. Me as a homeowner, it's like, we thought about selling, but then what were we lacking?
Yeah.
You know, the house we were looking to upgrade into was much more expensive. And the only thing it solved for us, honestly, is a third car garage.
Yeah.
Literally, that's the only thing it solved.
That would be nice to have. That's something that's on my list to get. One of the things that's kind of coming, we're going to do some renovations to our backyard and build out a living space out there. Mm-hmm. And one of the options was, hey, you can put a pool in. I'm like, oh, cool. Hey, there, you know, what's the price? Price seems good. Let's go. You know, actually, do we really need a pool?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the mindset now.
It is.
You know, as when you were 25, you're like, yeah, let's do it.
Right, right.
You know, and the same thing with cars now for me. I'm like, yeah, that S-Class. Oh, I remember driving those. Those are really, but I really need to spend $120,000 on a car.
Yeah.
I mean, that's expensive.
Yeah.
That's a $2,000 a month payment.
Right.
money could be going into something else that probably pays me back. And, you know, it's agonizing.
Yeah, it is, you know? For sure.
So getting up to, like, what was the first indication in your life that you were like, yeah, okay, all this stuff is going to start paying off, you know, that I went through, and I'm applying all the positives out of it to my life and growing as an individual.
Yeah.
What was the first indication that you were like, okay, this is going in the right direction?
You know, honestly, the first indication versus the first application, I believe, is different. The indication was, I was probably in my mid-20s, and I was running an apartment complex. You know, I was young and I was running this apartment complex. And I could see that some of my engagement with people, just being a genuine person, a person that truly cared about people. And I truly cared about people because of the fact that I was so uncared for when I was young. Mm-hmm. Now, I say uncared for. My mom loved me to pieces. It's just that feeling of vulnerableness and being alone when you're a child.
Yeah.
That I noticed that, hey, you start building these relationships and we start utilizing the tools of being able to identify, you know, someone's walking in and you're running an apartment complex, they look upset, there's a chance that something's leaking in their place. So you approach that differently than somebody that's coming in with a different attitude.
Right.
So there was an application to that to some degree. But when I really started pushing that application out was about the time my daughter was born.
Wow.
You know, and I know that sounds so immature in the fact that you're like, okay, well, that was 7 years ago. It was. And I identified that my life needed to pivot from the guy that was interested in going to the gym and going out to the bars and chasing women and nice cars and all this other stuff to, I've got to look out for what's best for me and my family and my growth and their vision of me. And I can also share these stories to build a community around us that are people that are like-minded that want to accomplish the same goals.
Yeah.
And so my friends started changing, you know, and that was a big thing I identified too, is different friends, different priorities. You know, you have a child, first child, and everything around you changes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Your best friend that used to go out to the club with you all the time doesn't call you anymore.
Yep.
You know, and that's not, I don't want to say that's the case for me. I still talk to my best friend all the time, but you see the fallout friends fall out, right? Yeah. And so I'm like, what can I do different? And that thought process was start to share these things.
Right.
Let's not put, and I'm reading this sign over here that says no negativity, and this is resonating because what is Facebook for the most part?
Negativity.
Negativity, right? Yeah. You can get out there and you can find the baddest stuff in the strangest areas, the worst things ever, or you can be that person that goes out there and shares.
Yeah.
And shares something positive. Now, are there days where I have a bad day? Sure.
Yeah.
But why would I share that with somebody else? Why would I impede on your life with something negative? Maybe you have your own problems, right? Yeah. Why would I share that with you?
The positive in that is somebody else's reading it going, okay, my problems don't sound that bad.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And realistically, that's a great way to, I say, distill it down to a simple fashion is like, let's say I run out of gas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I have a car. I have a nice car at that, okay? My bad for running out of gas, but there's somebody out there that wishes they had a way to work today.
Yeah.
Somebody out there that went out there and their car just wouldn't start because it had ended its life.
They got to take an hour and a half just to get to work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Taking
in
a bus.
100 degree weather.
Yeah.
You know,
pedaling a bike or walking.
Yeah. So is my problem relevant? Or what about the men and women in Iraq and Afghanistan? You know, what about what they're doing every day? We sit here and complain, oh, it's 100 degrees here.
Yeah.
Cool. It's 116 degrees there and people are trying to kill you.
Yeah.
You know,
and they have no AC.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And but that relativity and that perspective is a discipline.
Yeah.
You know, to constantly think about that, because I'm all about, I tell people, look, you know, if you're on Facebook participating in these political arguments, commenting, and there's a whole philosophy that I talk about and kind of study called the pendulum.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it is going from a we to a me type of centered cultural attitude of society.
Right.
And it's a 40-year swing. So we're about to go into the zenith of a we, which means as we get to the zenith of the pendulum, where the opposite action starts happening,
right,
is where we've taken a good thing too far. A good thing that started at the tipping point 20 years ago is now we're taking it too far. And we're all feeling it. We understand there's something really unsettling. There's a lot of bad energy out there. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to happen. Yeah. And I kind of help people understand that. And I don't know if I've become an expert on the whole thing, but whenever I talk to people or see people that are stressing out, you know, I lost my friends. I've lost, you know, some people that haven't talked to me in a couple of months because of this, that, and the other, all the things that have been going on.
Right.
I always tell them, look, this is, what if I told you this is supposed to happen?
Yeah.
And it happens every 80 years.
Yeah.
And if you take it back, every 80 years, like clockwork, we've had some sort of calamity,
right?
And it's the darkest part of the pendulum swing is the we, the we zenith, where you see a lot of despots start to come to fruition and things of that nature. So, you know, 80 years ago, we had World War II, and the world, the uncertainty in the world was just at a apex.
Right.
80 years before that, people that say, well, we've never been as divided as we are now. Oh, wait a minute.
Welcome to 2021.
The Civil War was pretty dividing.
Right.
Okay.
Right,
I mean, that was a pretty, and that was 80 years. Yeah. 80 years before that, just, you know, prior to that was the birth of our nation.
Right.
A pretty big cataclysm.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, I look at that and I try and put that stuff out there on Facebook as a positive.
Yeah.
Have faith. This will all blow over too. There's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's not as bad as it possibly could be. Yeah, it could get worse.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I'm not going to be surprised if it does.
Right.
Because it's just supposed to happen.
Yep.
Because what happens, like you said, when you go through something bad, you have the intrinsic memory of your history.
Yeah.
Of how it was when you were a child.
Right.
You know what that felt like.
Well, yeah.
That's a benefit for you.
Yeah.
The people who lived through the Holocaust, the people who lived through World War II,
right,
know what that feels like.
Well,
that's why we repeat history.
Exactly. Well, and knowing what it feels like, the strength to that is you know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you hear a lot of people, oh, you can call me whatever you want. It never hurt me. It never bothered me. The fact is you can call that person something that's going to bother them. But like in my situation, you know, being abused and name called and everything else, I can take a lot more than the average person. And it's because the identity of, hey, we've been through these bad times.
Yeah, I've been here before.
Right, exactly. Yeah. We recognize this.
You remember that scar, or whatever it's physical or it's mental or internal or whatever, you can identify that and say, oh, yeah, try something else.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
But with that being said, I mean, everybody's got something to deal with.
What's your problem?
Alex, what's your problem?
You want me to answer that honestly?
Yeah, of course.
So I'm in this hiring zone right now where I have to hire an assistant, right? Yeah. And my assistant, so I need this element within my business that I have an individual that is more of like a outreach person, a relationship manager, so to speak, but not the person building relationships and finding a quality person to add to the team. I don't want just somebody.
Right.
I want somebody that's passionate about the growth. And we have someone in our sights, but that's my problem right now. I can't scale. I can't grow without this other building block.
And finally, is it a matter of finding the right person, or do you have availability of people? You have bodies you could pull in, just not the right people.
It's the right person.
Right.
And again, we have someone in our sights. You know, we're trying to hammer out the details of it. But it has to be a person that cares for my client as much as I do.
You listen to Gary Vaynerchuk at all?
I do.
Do you know what he says about that?
I don't.
He says, good luck.
Yeah.
He'll tell you that you know.
Nobody else will care for your business like you do.
More exactly.
Right, right.
He says, so you might as well let that ship sail.
Yeah. No, and you're absolutely right. But I am a believer that there's somebody that is passionate about their job.
Right.
And if you can find this much, and I know the audience can't hear what this much is, but it's literally like half a fingertip, you know, this much. That's all I need.
Buddy of mine, Rich Redmond with the Rich Redmond Show, another podcast I produce and guest or co-hosting on. He's got a thing called Crash, and he's the drummer for Jason Aldean, has been for the past 20 plus years, among other people. He came to town with the marching order that I will be a first call top tier drummer in Nashville. When people need something tracked, they're going to think of me first.
That's awesome.
That's what his game was. So that's what he did too. But he used a concept called CRASH, and it's an acronym, and it fits into what he does with crash symbols and stuff.
Right.
Commitment, relationships, attitude, skill, and hunger.
Yep.
Attitude is 90%.
Oh yeah.
Of everything. For sure. Right. You can train around the other stuff, the skill. You know, the attitude can feed into the hunger and vice versa. So it's tough. I mean, maybe it's just finding that person that, you know, finding what they're, it's about them, more about them than it is you.
Well, and what drives them.
Yeah.
That's the difference with each individual. You have to figure out, what is your driver? How can I manage you best to allow you to become the best?
Right.
You know, so, yeah.
Is it approach maybe saying, hey, you're kind of, even in a job interview, you're still selling yourself. You're still a salesperson. I need somebody to kind of embrace that notion, understand that they have to do some business development, help me build relations, help me build upon the relationships I already have.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing.
It is. It's some of that. And it's a lot. I think I talked about this with you before we went on air. I'm not as organized as some people.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that person has to understand organization, and that's, I'm not scatterbrained.
Yeah.
But I put everything in my brain, and that's how I deal with it. So if you don't ask me, I forget to tell you.
Are you looking for an all-in-one solution, or maybe two or three people?
So right now I have another assistant, so I'm just looking for an add-on. So I'm looking kind of for a go-between from me to this person, to my other assistant, so we can have a nice fluid pipeline.
Yeah.
And then this person that's in the middle is kind of doing some of the outreach to some of the local individuals, because my other assistant's up in Wisconsin.
Oh, I got you.
So I had two at my office at one point in time. And, I say two at my office. One at my office and one in Wisconsin. The one that was at my office decided to go start a landscaping business and do his own thing, which, good for him. You know, going out and doing your own thing, I highly encourage it. Like, if you ever work with me, and there's something you can do better for you and your family, I will support you 100%.
Yeah.
You know, go and do those things. But I just need that bridge. I'm missing that bridge right now. So that's been my problem for about 60 days.
Yeah, it's a tough thing these days.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody seems, I think all the people that are actually worth a damn are already they're working.
Yeah, they're working. And, you know, with inflation and everything else, a going wage has to be much higher than it used to be.
Oh,
it used to be, hey, $32,000 a year plus this, and now it's like, hey, 40 grand a year, 50, 60, you know, where does it stop?
Right.
But quality creates more business. And as a business owner, I know you know this, that quality work creates the need for more business, which creates the need for more people, which creates the need for more business to supply the people with the money they need to feed their families. And so it's a vicious circle.
And also just having that person that can offload the things off of your plate so you can go out and dominate, you know, build your business more.
I literally drove around for 2 hours this morning dropping off cookies.
Really?
Do you think I don't benefit from dropping off cookies? Like, I do. Don't get me wrong. But none of these people were at their office, right? So it was me and the receptionist. And that is not best usage of my time. I appreciate going to see my agents and everything, but none of them were there.
Right.
So,
well, even in the sense of being public on Facebook or social media, putting videos out there.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the stuff that you talk about being motivational in nature and entrepreneurial, mm-hmm. are you attracting like-minded, like-hearted people?
Yes.
Brad Lee had the same. He was on a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
He had the same exact problem. He's like, how do I build a culture?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Good question, dude. You got to start with your core values and what you believe in. I said, the nature of you putting you out the way you do, or how your team does it, I said, should attract the people that are most interested in working with you.
Right.
I would think.
It does. And I'll be honest with you, I think about this almost every day.
Yeah.
I am very humble and excited and grateful that I have the friends I have.
Right.
Because my younger me would never imagine I would know the people I know now.
Right.
And my younger me would be envious of the circle of people I am associated with and affiliated with and friends with now. And I say those three things because we have what we call associates. Those are people that, hey, you bump into them at the grocery store and it's, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
You have your affiliates, which are people you kind of do business with, but you're not buddy-buddy. And then you have your friends, you know. I never thought I would be where I am now, and I'm grateful that I am.
Yeah.
And that circle stems from that positive, the constant. You and I, for example, I am fortunate to be here right now. I was thinking about this on the way over here, to have the opportunity to be on somebody else's podcast, to be invited to do so. And it wasn't like I put an ad, hey, I want to be on podcast.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I am grateful for the opportunity. And I believe that if you show that gratitude and you express it, you know, I text my buddy yesterday. He's actually my mechanic. And I said, hey, dude, I'm so grateful for your friendship. Thank you for always taking care of me. I appreciate what you do for me.
Yeah.
And it was that simple, that little piece of gratitude that lets him know that I appreciate what it is he does.
Yeah.
And so his reciprocation will always be there.
What's a them-centric? My hashtag.
Right.
I call it my hashtag. I don't know if it's, you know, if it's mine or whoever's, but I call it be them-centric.
Yeah.
From selling to relationships, the more them-centric you are,
right,
that reciprocates. People like it when you make it about them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's, you know, and that's the biggest thing I struggle with, even on, and here I am talking about me, online and social media, I'll put, you know, positive stuff out there and it's like crickets.
Right.
And then I see you put stuff out there and you get a ton of engagement.
Yeah.
So there's a credibility thing that for sure is intrinsic and felt.
Yeah.
There's tactile.
I don't know if maybe because I do it a lot.
Maybe.
You know, because I think about that. Like if you went to my page and you didn't know me, right? And you're like, all right, who's this clown? And you looked, you're not going to see anything bad.
Right.
You know what I mean? And my fiance gets on me sometimes. She's like, why do you post stuff about our personal life? I'm like, because it creates value for people.
Yeah.
You know, there's people are going to see it anyways, right?
Yeah.
Let it create a one person. That's all I need. When I started my podcast, all I wanted to do was impact one person.
Right.
And I got a private message one time from a lady. And she told me that my message that I spoke on that podcast that day changed her relationship she was in. She was in an abusive relationship.
Wow.
And this allowed her to look at the situation she was in and start to pull away from that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't attribute my words to, I saved this girl, you know.
Yeah.
But I created a thought. And that thought allowed this person to remove themselves from a situation that, who knows? Who knows where it could have ended up, right?
Right.
I helped that one person I set out to help. And now I hope I help more.
And it's one of those scenarios I would imagine that so many people in her life might have been saying the same thing.
I'm sure.
But familiarity is a bitch.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as soon as you get the same message being echoed by somebody outside of that bias.
Right.
Then it sinks in.
It's like your dad saying it versus your best friend.
Right. Yeah. It's like you telling your wife that she's beautiful all the time, but until she gets hit on at the coffee shop, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Always happens.
Thankfully, mine doesn't drink coffee.
But you had mentioned before about talking to your mechanic friend. What's his name?
Brett. So Brett owns a company called German Motor Works. And I won't, you know, splash his name in too hard.
Yeah, why not?
But he's an honest individual.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about him. It's about him doing the right thing for individuals.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I see in him. And guess what? His prices, he could be more than everybody else.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I don't care what anyone else charges, because I go there to support his family by providing him business. And I know in turn, he will always be honest with me. Like I said, he could be $100 more per oil change. I know that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But would I jeopardize the relationship I have with that individual and the integrity he expresses to me over $100? And the answer is absolutely not.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, it's the case of looking at that them-centric, you're thinking of them, you've always got them in mind.
Yeah.
With our salesperson, his name is Kyle, who sells the Octave product that we sell with Big Dot, mm-hmm. we're training him to be a salesperson. He's never done it before.
Right.
He says, well, how do I follow up? How do I cold call? I said, everything you have to have has got to have value for the person you're reaching out to. It can be as simple as saying, hey, what's up? And really meaning it. All right, because it make it less of a salutation and more of a, how are you? When was the last time somebody asked you genuinely how you are? And I'm really here to listen.
Well, and some people will take you up on that answer or that question. Just so
you, and you got to expect that.
You do. I have certain friends. You call, hey, how's it going? Boom. 5 minutes, you know. And you know, you have to be prepared. It's got to be genuine. You know, and so that's the biggest thing is genuine people in this world.
And as long as you can convey that in your voice and your attitude, and there's not, well, okay, now I've gotten that out of the way. Now I'm going to get to the meat of the matter and ask you for something.
Right.
No, if you reach out on a continuous basis, hey, man, just checking in. How are you? You know, just like you were saying, hey, I really appreciate you and stuff like that. I just sent a text message to a friend of mine that it's been a not contentious year. Oh, it's been contentious all around. But I mean, basically, there's a lot of things that he and I had to weather through and stuff. And I finally just sent him a note. I said, hey, man, I apologize for being, if I was an ass for the past 12 months, I got to let you know that I love you like an older brother. I really do. And he appreciated that. You know, sometimes it's just that.
It's that simple.
That's right. Man, how do people look you up and find you and all that fun stuff?
So I have a website, ajnashville.com. You can find me there, my podcast. You can schedule a time to talk to me. Here's the thing. I may have said something that triggered thought or emotion throughout this podcast. And if I did, feel free to reach out to me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very strict. If it's not in my schedule, it usually doesn't happen. So, but, you know, just shoot me an email, whatever. You can also email me at aj@ajnashville.com. Those are realistically the two best ways. Those are the, they're so easy to remember, so easy to access.
Yeah. All your socials are there, all that stuff.
Everything's there. Yeah. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Instagram. Instagram is, surprisingly, AJ Nashville.
So it's the AJ show, right?
Yeah. AJ Nashville podcast.
AJ Nashville
podcast. Actually, I take that back. I have pivoted. I now have a co-host. It's the Greg and Alex show, or Greg and AJ. Greg and Alex, Greg and AJ. One of those two. It's something like that, but it's on the website.
But you put out a considerable amount of episodes, 180, you said?
Yep.
Over, so, how long did it take you?
This November will be, I believe, the fourth year.
Okay, yeah.
So it's been some time, but, you know, like anything else, you have those times where you're like, oh, I'm going to do 10 this week.
Yeah.
And you do one.
Yeah.
Or you do zero.
Yeah.
So
has it helped your business? I mean, did you find was there a turning point in your social media exposure and your podcasting that made people all of a sudden start engaging?
I cannot attribute my podcast directly to success.
Right.
But I feel like if you are constantly there, that people will remember.
Right.
And I believe that my positive message, I have had people, they're like, you know, I see you on Facebook. You're always positive. You're the type of person I want to work with.
Right.
And I'm grateful for that. You know, the connections I've made, like there's no possible way that I would know the people I know if it wasn't for that message.
Right.
So,
well, I appreciate your messages and your positivity.
Thank you.
It's certainly become evident on my radar, and we've conversed back and forth. It's been a great first time meeting you, and I'm glad to have done it in this fashion.
Likewise.
I mean, I'm all about positivity as well, but it just doesn't, I guess, maybe people think I'm a jerk. And it's seriously, I put like, you know, stuff out and I share it from a page, and it's probably the Facebook algorithm.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like crickets.
Right.
I'm like, you got to, okay, maybe
but people think I'm a jerk. But the thing is, Let's say it is. All right. And I'm gonna challenge your thought process with this. So let's say it is. Let's say everyone's like, you know what? He's such a jerk. I'm not gonna like it. All that matters is maybe that one person, you'll see a pattern. One person always likes what you say, and you're changing that one person.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. Keep the message going, because if one person's getting value, you have provided value to someone.
It was worthwhile.
It was, absolutely. Yeah.
And hopefully it'll build off of that. It could be 20 years from now, same person.
It could be. That one person's like, hey.
You know, you help one, why not?
Yep,
exactly. Well, guys, thanks for listening and watching. Check us out at whatsyourproblempodcast.com. Check out AJ at ajnashville.com as well. If you have any comments or you want to tell me that I'm a jerk or I'm ugly or you hate my voice, give me a 1-star review. Give me a 5-star review. I mean, it's a review at the end. Whatsyourproblempodcast.com. www.allexwells.com. Everything's there to follow, like, share, and review, and subscribe, and all that fun stuff. Alex, once again, man, I really do appreciate you coming out.
Thank you.
And good to meet you.
Very nice to meet you as well.